What if he lied? Victorian could smell the sea through the open window, though the room stank of wine and blood and sex. The cold salt air helped to clear his head. What do you mean? Euron turned to face him, his bruised blue lips curled in a half smile. Perhaps we can fly. All of us. How will we ever know, unless we leap from some tall tower? The wind came gusting through the window and stirred his sable cloak. There was something obscene and disturbing about his nakedness. No man ever truly knows what he can do unless he dares to leap. There is the window. Leap. Victorian had no patience for this. His wounded hand was troubling him. What do you want? The world. Firelight glimmered in Euron's eye. His smiling eye. Will you take a cup of Lord Hewitt's wine? There's no wine half so sweet as wine taken from a beaten foe. No. Victorian glanced away. Cover yourself. Euron seated himself and gave his cloak a twitch, so it covered his private parts. I had forgotten what a small and noisy folk they are, my ironborn. I would bring them dragons, and they shout out for grapes. Grapes are real. A man can gorge himself on grapes. Their juice is sweet, and they make wine. What do dragons make? Woe. The crow's eye sipped from his silver cup. I once held a dragon's egg in this hand, brother. This Mirish wizard swore he could hatch it if I gave him a year and all the gold that he required. When I grew bored with his excuses, I slew him. As he watched his entrails sliding through his fingers, he said, "But it has not been a year." He laughed. "Craigorn's died, you know." "Who?" "The man who blew my dragon horn. When the maester cut him open, his lungs were charred as black as soot." Victorian shuddered. "Show me this dragon's egg." "I threw it in the sea during one of my dark moods." Euron gave a shrug. "It comes to me that the reader was not wrong. Too large a fleet could never hold together over such a distance. The voyage is too long, too perilous. Only our finest ships and crews could hope to sail to Slaver's Bay and back. The Iron Fleet." "The Iron Fleet is mine," Victorian thought. He said nothing. The crow's eye filled two cups with a strange black wine that flowed as thick as honey. "Drink with me, brother. Have a taste of this." He offered one of the cups to Victorian. The captain took the cup Euron had not offered, sniffed at its contents suspiciously. Seen up close, it looked more blue than black. It was thick and oily with a smell like rotted flesh. He tried a small swallow and spit it out at once. "Foul stuff! Do you mean to poison me?" "I mean to open your eyes." Euron drank deep from his own cup and smiled. "Shade of the evening, the wine of the warlocks. I came upon a cask of it when I captured a certain galleass out of Carth, along with some cloves and nutmeg, 40 bolts of green silk, and 4 warlocks who told a curious tale. One presumed to threaten me, so I killed him and fed him to the other 3. They refused to eat of their friend's flesh at first, but when they grew hungry enough, they had a change of heart. Men are meat." Balon was mad, Euron is madder, and Euron is maddest of them all. Victorian was turning to go when the crow's eye said, "A king must have a wife to give him heirs. Brother, I have need of you. Will you go to Slaver's Bay and bring my love to me?" "I had a love once, too." Victorian's hands coiled into fists, and a drop of blood fell to patter on the floor. "I should beat you raw and red and feed you to the crabs, the same as I did her." "You have sons," he told his brother. "Baseborn mongrels, born of whores and weepers. They are of your body. So are the contents of my chamber pot. None is fit to sit the sea stone chair, much less the iron throne. No, to make an heir that's worthy of him, I need a different woman. When the kraken weds the dragon, brother, let all the world beware." "What dragon?" said Victorian, frowning. "The last of her line. They say she is the fairest woman in the world. Her hair is silver gold and her eyes are amethysts. But you need not take my word for it, brother. Go to Slaver's Bay, behold her beauty, and bring her back to me. Why should I? Victorian demanded. For love. For duty. Because your king commands it. Euron chuckled. And for the sea stone chair. It is yours, once I claim the Iron Throne. You shall follow me as I followed Balon, and your own true-born sons shall one day follow you. My own sons. But to have a true-born son, a man must first have a wife. Victorian had no luck with wives. Euron's gifts are poisoned, he reminded himself. But still. The choice is yours, brother. Live a thrall or die a king. Do you dare to fly? Unless you take the leap, you'll never know. Euron's smiling eye was bright with mockery. Or do I ask too much of you? It is a fearsome thing to sail beyond Valyria. I could sail the Iron Fleet to hell if need be. When Victorian opened his hand, his palm was red with blood. I'll go to Slaver's Bay, aye. I'll find this dragon woman and I'll bring her back. But not for you. You stole my wife and despoiled her, so I'll have yours. The fairest woman in the world, for me.
Tyrion. The rushes were scratchy under the soles of his bare feet. My cousin chooses a queer hour to come visiting, Tyrion told a sleep-befuddled Podrick Payne, who doubtless expected to be well roasted for waking him. See him to my solar, and tell him I'll be down shortly. It was well past midnight, he judged, from the black outside the window. Does Lancel think to find me drowsy and slow of wit at this hour? He wondered. No, Lancel scarce thinks at all. This is Cersei's doing. His sister would be disappointed. Even abed, he worked well into the morning, reading by the flickering light of a candle, scrutinizing the reports of Varys' whisperers, and poring over Littlefinger's books of accounts until the columns blurred and his eyes ached. He splashed some tepid water on his face from the basin beside his bed and took his time squatting in the guardrobe, the night air cold on his bare skin. Sir Lancel was 16 and not known for his patience. Let him wait and grow more anxious in the waiting. When his bowels were empty, Tyrion slipped on a bedrobe and roughed his thin flaxen hair with his fingers, all the more to look as if he had been awakened from sleep. Lancel was pacing before the ashes of the hearth, garbed in slashed red velvet with black silk undersleeves, a jeweled dagger and gilded scabbard hanging from his sword belt. "Cousin," Tyrion greeted him, "your visits are too few. To what do I owe this undeserved pleasure?" "Her Grace the Queen Regent has sent me to command you to release Grand Maester Pycelle." Sir Lancel showed Tyrion a crimson ribbon bearing Cersei's lion seal impressed in golden wax. "Here is her warrant." "So it is," Tyrion waved it away. "I hope my sister is not overtaxing her strength so soon after her illness. It would be a great pity if she were to suffer a relapse." "Her Grace is quite recovered," Sir Lancel said curtly. "Music to my ears. Though not a tune I fond of. I should have given her a larger dose." Tyrion had hoped for a few more days without Cersei's interference, but he was not too terribly surprised by her return to health. She was Jaime's twin, after all. He made himself smile pleasantly. "Pod, build us a fire. The air is too chilly for my taste. Will you take a cup with me, Lancel? I find that mulled wine helps me sleep." "I need no help sleeping," Sir Lancel said. "I am come at Her Grace's behest, not to drink with you, imp." Knighthood had made the boy bolder, Tyrion reflected. That, and the sorry part he had played in murdering King Robert. "Wine does have its dangers," he smiled as he poured. "As to Grand Maester Picel, if my sweet sister is so concerned for him, I would have thought she'd come herself. Instead, she sends you. What am I to make of that?"
"Make of it what you will, so long as you release your prisoner. The Grand Maester is a staunch friend to the Queen Regent, and under her personal protection."
A hint of a sneer played about the lad's lips. He was enjoying this. "He takes his lessons from Cersei.
Her Grace will never consent to this outrage. She reminds you that she is Joffrey's regent."
"As I am Joffrey's hand."
"The hand serves," the young knight informed him airily. "The regent rules until the king is of age."
"Perhaps you ought to write that down so I'll remember it better." The fire was crackling merrily.
"You may leave us, Pud," Tyrion told his squire. Only when the boy was gone did he turn back to Lancel.
"There is more?"
"Yes, Her Grace bids me inform you that Sir Jaslyn Bywater defied a command issued in the king's own name."
"Which means that Cersei has already ordered Bywater to release Picel, and has been rebuffed."
"I see. She insists that the man be removed from his office and placed under arrest for treason. I warn you."
He set aside his wine cup. "I'll hear no warnings from you, boy."
"Sir,"
Lancel said stiffly. He touched his sword, perhaps to remind Tyrion that he wore one.
"Have a care how you speak to me, imp."
Doubtless he meant to sound threatening, but that absurd wisp of a moustache ruined the effect.
"Oh, unhand your sword. One cry from me, and Shagga will burst in and kill you. With an axe, not a wineskin."
Lancel reddened. Was he such a fool as to believe his part in Robert's death had gone unnoted?
"I am a knight."
"So I've noted. Tell me, did Cersei have you knighted before or after she took you into her bed?"
The flicker in Lancel's green eyes was all the admission Tyrion needed. So Varys told it true.
"Well, no one can ever claim that my sister does not love her family."
"What, nothing to say? No more warnings for me, sir? You will withdraw these filthy accusations, or—"
"Please, have you given any thought to what Joffrey will do when I tell him you murdered his father to bed his mother?"
"It was not like that," Lancel protested, horrified.
"No? What was it like, pray?"
"The Queen gave me the strong wine. Your own father, Lord Tywin, when I was named the King's Squire, he told me to obey her in everything."
"Did he tell you to fuck her too?" "Look at him. Not quite so tall, his features not so fine, and his hair is sand instead of spun gold. Yet still, even a poor copy of Jamie is sweeter than an empty bed, I suppose."
"No, I thought not. I never meant. I only did as I was bid. I
hated every second of it. Is that what you would have me believe? A high place at court, knighthood, my sister's legs opening for you at night? Oh, yes, it must have been terrible for you."
Tyrion pushed himself to his feet. "Wait here. His Grace will want to hear of this."
The defiance went from Lancel all at once.
The young knight fell to his knees, a frightened boy. "Mercy, my lord, I beg you."
"Save it for Joffrey. He likes a good beg."
"My lord, it was your sister's bidding, the Queen, as you said, but His Grace, he'd never understand."
"Would you have me keep the truth from the King?"
"For my father's sake, I'll leave the city. It will be as if it never happened. I swear, I will end it."
It was hard not to laugh.
"I think not." Now the lad looked lost. My lord,
you heard me. My father told you to obey my sister. Very well, obey her. Stay close to her side. Keep her trust.
pleasure her as often as she requires it. No one need ever know, so long as you keep faith with me. I want to know what Circe is doing, where she goes, who she sees, what they talk of, what plan she is hatching, all. And you will be the one to tell me, won't you?
Yes, my lord, Lancelot spoke without a moment's hesitation. Tyrion liked that.
I will, I swear it, as you command.
Rise. Tyrion filled the second cup and pressed it on him. Drink to our understanding. I promise there are no boars in the castle that I know of. Lancelot lifted the cup and drank, albeit stiffly. Smile, cousin. My sister's a beautiful woman, and it's all for the good of the realm. You could do well out of this. Knighthood is nothing. If you're clever, you'll have a lordship from me before you're done.
Tyrion swirled the wine in his cup.
We want Circe to have every faith in you. Go back and tell her. I beg her forgiveness. Tell her that you frightened me, that I want no conflict between us, that henceforth I shall do nothing without her consent.
But her demands?
Oh, I'll give her Pycelle.
You will?
Lancelot seemed astonished. Tyrion smiled. I'll release him on the morrow. I could swear that I hadn't armed a hair on his head, but it wouldn't be strictly true. In any case, he's well enough, though I won't vouch for his vigour. The black sails are not a healthy place for a man his age. Circe can keep him as a pet, or send him to the wall, I don't care which. But I won't have him on the council.
And Sir Jacelyn?
Tell my sister you believe you can win him away from me, given time. That ought to content her for a while.
As you say,
Lancelot finished his wine. One last thing. With King Robert dead, it would be most embarrassing should his grieving widow suddenly grow great with child.
My lord, the queen has commanded me not to,
His ears had turned Lannister crimson.
I spill my seed on her belly, my lord.
Oh, a lovely belly, I have no doubt. Moisten it as often as you wish. But see that your due falls nowhere else. I want no more nephews. Is that clear?
Sir Lancelot made a stiff bow and took his leave.
Tyrion allowed himself a moment to feel sorry for the boy. Another fool, and a weakling as well. But he does not deserve what Circe and I are doing to him. It was a kindness that his uncle Kevin had two other sons. This one was unlikely to live out the year. Circe would have him killed out of hand if she learned he was betraying her, and if by some grace of the gods she did not, Lancelot would never survive the day Jaime Lannister returned to King's Landing. The only question would be whether Jaime cut him down in jealous rage, or Circe murdered him first to keep Jaime from finding out. Tyrion Silver was on Circe. A restlessness was on him, and Tyrion felt full well he would not get back to sleep tonight. Not here, in any case. He found Podrick Payne asleep in a chair outside the door of his solar and shook him by the shoulder. Summon Brunn, and then run down to the stable and have two horses saddled. The squire's eyes were cloudy with sleep.
Horses?
Those big brown animals that love apples. I'm sure you've seen them. Four legs and a tail. But Brunn first. The sellsword was not long in appearing.
Who pissed in your soup?
He demanded.
Circe as ever.
You think I'd be used to the taste by now, but never mind. My gentle sister seems to have mistaken me for Ned Stark.
I hear he was taller.
Not after Joff took off his head. You ought to have dressed more warmly. The night is chill.
Are we going somewhere?
Are all sellswords as clever as you? The city streets were dangerous, but with Brunn beside him, Tyrion felt safe enough. The guards let him out of a postern gate in the north wall, and they rode down a shadow-black lane to the foot of Aegon's High Hill, and thence to Pig Run Alley, past rows of shuttered windows and tall timber and stone buildings whose upper stories leaned out so far over the street they almost kissed. The moon seemed to follow them as they went, playing peek and sneak among the chimneys. They encountered no one but a lone old crone carrying a dead cat by the tail. She gave them a fearful look, as if she were afraid they might try to steal her dinner, and slunk off into the shadows without a word. Tyrion reflected on the men who had been hanged before him, who had proved no match for his sister's wiles. How could they be, men like that? Too honest to live, too noble to shit? Cersei devours such fools every morning when she breaks her fast. The only way to defeat my sister is to play her own game, and that was something the Lord Stark and Aaron would never do. Small wonder that both of them were dead, while Tyrion had never felt more alive. His stunted legs might make him a comic grotesque at a harvest ball, but this dance he knew. Despite the hour, the brothel was crowded. Shatea greeted them pleasantly and escorted them to the common room. Bronn went upstairs with a dark-eyed girl from Dorne, but Alayaya was busy entertaining. "She will be so pleased to know you've come," said Shataya. "I will see that the turret room is made ready for you. Will my lord take a cup of wine while he waits?" "I will," he said. The wine was poor stuff compared to the vintages from the arbor the house normally served.
"You must forgive us, my lord," Shataya said. "I cannot find good wine at any price of late."
"You are not alone in that, I fear." Shataya commiserated with him a moment, then excused herself and glided off. A handsome woman, Tyrion reflected, as he watched her go. He had seldom seen such elegance and dignity in a whore, though to be sure she saw herself more as a kind of priestess. Perhaps that is the secret. It is not what we do so much as why we do it. Somehow that thought comforted him. A few of the other patrons were giving him sideways looks. The last time he ventured out, a man had spit on him. Well, had tried to. Instead, he spit on Bronn, and in future would do his spitting without teeth.
"Is my lord feeling unloved?"
Dancy slipped into his lap and nibbled at his ear.
"I have a cure for that."
Smiling, Tyrion shook his head.
"You are too beautiful for words, sweetling, but I've grown fond of Alayaya's remedy." "You've never tried mine. My lord never chooses anyone but Yaya. She's good, but I'm better. Don't you want to see? Next time, perhaps."
Tyrion had no doubt that Dancy would be a lively handful. She was pug-nosed and bouncy, with freckles and a mane of thick red hair that tumbled down past her waist. But he had Shay waiting for him at the manse. Giggling, she put her hand between his thighs and squeezed him through his breeches.
"I don't think he wants to wait till next time," she announced. "He wants to come out and count all my freckles, I think."
"Dancy?" Alayaya stood in the doorway, dark and cool, in gauzy green silk.
"His lordship has come to visit me."
Tyrion gently disentangled himself from the other girl and stood. Dancy did not seem to mind.
"Next time," she reminded him.
She put a finger to her mouth and sucked it. As the black-skinned girl led him up the stairs, she said,
"Poor Dancy. She has a fortnight to get my lord to choose her. Elsewise, she loses her black pearls to Marai."
Marai was a cool, pale, delicate girl Tyrion had noticed once or twice. Green eyes and porcelain skin, long, straight, silvery hair, very lovely, but too solemn by half.
"I'd hate to have the poor child lose her pearls on account of me." "Then take her upstairs next time." "Maybe I will," she smiled. "I think not, my lord."
"She's right," Tyrion thought. I won't. She may only be a whore, but I am faithful to her, after my fashion.
In the turret room, as he opened the door of the wardrobe, he looked at Alaya curiously.
What do you do when I'm gone?
She raised her arms and stretched like some sleek black cat.
Sleep? I'm much better rested since you began to visit us, my lord. And Marie is teaching us to read. Perhaps soon I'll be able to pass the time with a book.
Sleep is good, he said, and books are better.
He gave her a quick kiss on the cheek. Then it was down the shaft and through the tunnel. As he left the stable on his piebald gelding, Tyrion heard the sound of music drifting over the rooftops. It was pleasant to think that men still sang, even in the midst of butchery and famine. Remembered notes filled his head, and for a moment he could almost hear Taisha as she sung to him half a lifetime ago. He reined up to listen. The tune was wrong, the words too faint to hear. A different song then, and why not? His sweet, innocent Taisha had been a lie, start to finish, only a whore his brother Jamie had hired to make him a man.
I'm free of Taisha now, he thought. She's haunted me half my life, but I don't need her any more, no more than I need Alayaya or Dancy or Marae, or the hundreds like them I've bedded over the years. I have Shay now. Shay.
The gates of the manse were closed and barred. Tyrion pounded until the ornate bronze eye clacked open. It's me. The man who admitted him was one of Vari's prettier finds, a bravassi dagger man with a hare lip and a lazy eye. Tyrion had wanted no handsome young guardsman loitering about Shay day after day.
Find me old, ugly, scarred men, preferably impotent, he had told the eunuch. Men who prefer boys, or men who prefer sheep, for that matter.
Varys had not managed to come up with any sheep lovers, but he did find a eunuch strangler and a pair of foul-smelling Ebonese who were as fond of axes as they were of each other. The others were as choice a lot of mercenaries as ever graced a dungeon, each uglier than the last. When Varys had paraded them before him, Tyrion had been afraid he'd gone too far, but Shay had never uttered a word of complaint.
And why would she? She has never complained of me, and I'm more hideous than all her guards together. Perhaps she does not even see ugliness.
Even so, Tyrion would sooner have used some of his mountain clansmen to guard the manse. Chella's black ears, perhaps, or the Moon Brothers. He had more faith in their iron loyalties and sense of honour than in the greed of sellswords. The risk was too great, however. All King's Landing knew the wildlings were his. If he sent the black ears here, it would be only a matter of time until the whole city knew the king's hand was keeping a concubine. One of the Ebonese took his horse.
"Have you awoken her?" Tyrion asked him.
"No, my lord."
"Good."
The fire in the bedchamber had burned down to embers, but the room was still warm. Shay had kicked off her blankets and sheets as she slept. She lay nude atop the feather bed, the soft curves of her young body limned in the faint glow from the hearth. Tyrion stood in the door and drank in the sight of her.
Younger than Marae, sweeter than Dancy, more beautiful than Alayaya, she is all I need, and more.
How could a whore look so clean and sweet and innocent, he wondered. He had not intended to disturb her, but the sight of her was enough to make him hard. He let his garments fall to the floor, then crawled onto the bed and gently pushed her legs apart and kissed her between the thighs. Shay murmured in her sleep. He kissed her again and licked at her secret sweetness, on and on, until his beard and her cunt were both soaked. When she gave a soft moan and shuddered, he climbed up and thrust himself inside her and exploded almost at once. Her eyes were open.
She smiled and stroked his head and whispered, "I just had the sweetest dream, my lord." Tyrion nipped at a small hard nipple and nestled his head on her shoulder. He did not pull out of her. Would that he never had to pull out of her. "This is no dream," he promised her. "It is real. All of it," he thought. "The wars, the intrigues, the great bloody game, and me in the centre of it. Me, the dwarf, the monster, the one they scorned and laughed at. But now I hold it all. The power, the city, the girl. This was what I was made for. And gods forgive me, but I do love it. And her. And her."
Arya. Whatever names Hare and the Black had meant to give his towers were long forgotten. They were called the Tower of Dread, the Widow's Tower, the Wailing Tower, the Tower of Ghosts, and King's Pyre Tower. Arya slept in a shallow niche in the cavernous vaults beneath the Wailing Tower on a bed of straw. She had water to wash in, whenever she liked, a chunk of soap. The work was hard, but no harder than walking miles every day. Weasel did not need to find worms and bugs to eat, as Arry had. There was bread every day, and barley stews with bits of carrot and turnip, and once a fortnight, even a bite of meat. Hot Pie ate even better. He was where he belonged, in the kitchens, a round stone building with a domed roof that was a world unto itself. Arya took her meals at a trestle table in the undercroft with Wheeze and his other charges. But sometimes she would be chosen to help fetch their food, and she and Hot Pie could steal a moment to talk. He could never remember that she was now Weasel, and kept calling her Arry, even though he knew she was a girl. Once he tried to slip her a hot apple tart, but he made such a clumsy job of it that two of the cooks saw. They took the tart away and beat him with a big wooden spoon. Gendry had been sent to the forge. Arya seldom saw him. As for those she served with, she did not even want to know their names. That only made it hurt worse when they died. Most of them were older than she was, and content to let her alone. Harrenhal was vast, much of it far gone in decay. Lady Went had held the castle as bannerman to House Tully, but she'd used only the lower thirds of two of the five towers, and let the rest go to ruin. Now she was fled, and the small household she'd left could not begin to tend the needs of all the knights, lords, and high-born prisoners Lord Tywin had brought. So the Lannisters must forage for servants as well as for plunder and provender. The talk was that Lord Tywin planned to restore Harrenhal to glory and make it his new seat once the war was done. Wheeze used Arya to run messages, draw water, and fetch food, and sometimes to serve at table in the barracks hall above the armory, where the men-at-arms took their meals. But most of her work was cleaning. The ground floor of the Wailing Tower was given over to storerooms and granaries, and two floors above housed part of the garrison, but the upper stories had not been occupied for 80 years. Now Lord Tywin had commanded that they be made fit for habitation again. There were floors to be scrubbed, grime to be washed off windows, broken chairs and rotted beds to be carried off. The topmost story was infested with nests of the huge black bats that House Went had used for its sigil, and there were rats in the cellars as well, and ghosts, some said, the spirits of Harren the Black and his sons. Arya thought that was stupid. Harren and his sons had died in King's Pyre Tower. That was why it had its name. So why should they cross the yard to haunt her? The Wailing Tower only wailed when the wind blew from the north, and that was just the sound the air made blowing through the cracks in the stones where they had fissured from the heat. If there were ghosts in Harrenhal, they never troubled her.
It was a living man she feared. Wheeze, Sir Gregor Clegane, and Lord Tywin Lannister himself, who kept his apartments in Kingspire Tower. Still the tallest and mightiest of all, though lopsided beneath the weight of the slag stone that made it look like some giant half-melted black candle. She wondered what Lord Tywin would do if she marched up to him and confessed to being Arya Stark. But she knew she'd never get near enough to talk to him, and anyhow, he'd never believe her if she did, and afterwards Wheeze would beat her bloody. In his own small strutting way, Wheeze was nearly as scary as Sir Gregor. The mountain swatted men like flies, but most of the time he did not even seem to know the fly was there. Wheeze always knew you were there, and what you were doing, and sometimes what you were thinking. He would hit at the slightest provocation, and he had a dog who was near as bad as he was, an ugly, spotted bitch that smelled worse than any dog Arya had ever known. Once she saw him set the dog on a latrine boy who denoyed him. She tore a big chunk out of the boy's calf, while Wheeze laughed. It took him only 3 days to earn the place of honour in her nightly prayers. "Wheeze," she would whisper first of all, "Dunson, Chiswick, Polliver, Raff the Sweetling, the Tickler, and the Hound Sir Gregor, Sir Amory, Sir Illan, Sir Meron, King Joffrey, Queen Cersei." If she let herself forget even one of them, how would she ever find him again to kill him? On the road, Arya had felt like a sheep, but Harrenhal turned her into a mouse. She was grey as a mouse, in her scratchy wool shift, and like a mouse she kept to the crannies and crevices and dark holes of the castle, scurrying out of the way of the mighty. Sometimes she thought they were all mice within those thick walls, even the knights and the great lords. The size of the castle made even Gregor Clegane seem small. Harrenhal covered thrice as much ground as Winterfell, and its buildings were so much larger they could scarcely be compared. Its stables housed 1,000 horses, its guards wood covered 20 acres, its kitchens were as large as Winterfell's Great Hall, and its own Great Hall, grandly named the Hall of 100 Hearths, even though it only had 30 and some. Arya had tried to count them twice, but she came up with 33 once and 35 the other time, was so cavernous that Lord Tywin could have feasted his entire host, though he never did. Walls, doors, halls, steps, everything was built to an inhuman scale that made Arya remember the stories old Nan used to tell of the giants who live beyond the wall. And as lords and ladies never notice the little grey mice under their feet, Arya heard all sorts of secrets just by keeping her ears open as she went about her duties. Pretty Pyre from the Buttery was a slut who was working her way through every night in the castle. The wife of the jailer was with child, but the real father was either Sir Alan Stackspear or a singer named White Smile Watt. Lord Lefford made mock of ghosts at table, but always kept a candle burning by his bed. Sir Donovan's choir, judge, could not hold his water when he slept. The cooks despised Sir Harry Swift and spit in all his food. Once she even overheard Maester Tuthmuir's serving girl confiding to her brother about some message that said Joffrey was a bastard and not the rightful king at all. Lord Tywin told him to burn the letter and never speak such filth again, the girl whispered. King Robert's brothers, Stannis and Renly, had joined the fighting, she heard.
And both of them kings now, we said. Realms got more kings than the castle's got rats.
Even Lannister men questioned how long Joffrey would hold the Iron Throne. The lad's got no army but them gold cloaks, and he's ruled by a eunuch, a dwarf, and a woman, she heard a lordling mutter in his cups. What good will the likes of them be if it comes to battle? And there was always talk of Beric Dondarrion. A fat archer once said the bloody mummers had slain him, but the others only laughed.
Lorch killed the man at Rushing Falls, and the mountain slain him twice. Got me a silver stag, says he don't stay dead this time neither.
Arya did not know who Bloody Mamas were until a fortnight later, when the queerest company of men she'd ever seen arrived at Harrenhal. Beneath the standard of a black goat with bloody horns rode copper men with bells in their braids, lancers astride striped black and white horses, bowmen with powdered cheeks, squat hairy men with shaggy shields, brown-skinned men in feathered cloaks, a wispy fool in green and pink motley, swordsmen with fantastic forked beards dyed green and purple and silver, spearmen with coloured scars that covered their cheeks, a slender man in septon's robes, a fatherly one in maester's grey, and a sickly one whose leather cloak was fringed with long blonde hair. At their head was a man, stick-thin and very tall, with a drawn, emaciated face, made even longer by the ropey black beard that grew from his pointed chin nearly to his waist. The helm that hung from his saddle horn was black steel, fastened in the shape of a goat's head. About his neck he wore a chain made of linked coins of many different sizes, shapes, and metals, and his horse was one of the strange black-and-white ones.
"You don't want to know that lot, Weasel,"
Wee said when he saw her looking at the goat-helm man. Two of his drinking friends were with him, men-at-arms in service to Lord Lefford. "Who are they?" she asked. One of the soldiers laughed. "The footman girl, toes of the goat, Lord Tywin's bloody mummers."
"Peace for wits, you get her flayed. You can scrub the bloody steps," said Wheeze. "They're sellswords, Weasel girl. Call themselves the Brave Companions. Don't use them other names when they can hear, or they'll hurt you bad. The goat helm's their captain, Lord Vargo Holt."
"He's no fucking lord," said the second soldier. "I heard Sir Aemry say so. He's just some sellsword with a mouth full of slubber and a high opinion of himself."
"Aye," said Weasel, "but she'd better call him lord if she wants to keep all her parts."
Arya looked at Vargo Holt again.
"How many monsters does Lord Tywin have?"
The brave companions were housed in the Widow's Tower, so Arya need not serve them. She was glad of that. On the very night they arrived, fighting broke out between the sellswords and some Lannister men. Sir Harry Swift's squire was stabbed to death, and two of the bloody mummers were wounded. The next morning, Lord Tywin hanged them both from the gatehouse walls, along with one of Lord Lyddon's archers. We said the archer had started all the trouble by taunting the sellswords over Beric Dondarrion. After the hangmen had stopped kicking, Vargo Holt and Sir Harry's embraced and kissed and swore to love each other always as Lord Tywin looked on. Arya thought it was funny the way Vargo Holt lisped and slobbered, but she knew better than to laugh. The bloody mummers did not linger long at Harrenhal, but before they rode out again, Arya heard one of them saying how a northern army under Roose Bolton had occupied the ruby ford of the Trident. "If he crosses, Lord Tywin will smash him again like he did on the Green Fork," a Lannister bowman said, but his fellows jeered him down.
"Bolton'll never cross, not until young Wolf marches from River Run with his wild Northmen and all them wolves."
Arya had not known her brother was so near. River Run was much closer than Winterfell, though she was not certain where it lay in relation to Harrenhal.
"I could find out somehow. I know I could, if only I could get away."
When she thought of seeing Rob's face again, Arya had to bite her lip.
"And I want to see Jon too, and Bran, and Rickon, and Mother, even Sansa. I'll kiss her and beg her pardons like a proper lady. She'll like that."
From the courtyard talk she'd learned that the upper chambers of the Tower of Dread housed 36 captives taken during some battle on the Green Fork of the Trident. Most had been given freedom of the castle in return for their pledge not to attempt escape.
"They vowed not to escape," Arya told herself, "but they never swore not to help me escape."
The captives ate at their own table in the Hall of 100 Hearths, and could often be seen about the grounds. 4 brothers took their exercise together every day, fighting with staves and wooden shields in the flowstone yard. 3 of them were Freys of the Crossing, the 4th their bastard brother. They were only there a short time, though. One morning, 2 other brothers arrived under a peace banner with a chest of gold, and ransomed them from the knights who'd captured them. The 6 Freys all left together. No one ransomed the Northmen, though. One fat lordling haunted the kitchens, Hutpie told her, always looking for a morsel. His moustache was so bushy that it covered his mouth, and the clasp that held his cloak was a silver and sapphire trident. He belonged to Lord Tywin, but the fierce-bearded young man who liked to walk the battlements alone in a black cloak patterned with white suns had been taken by some hedge knight who meant to get rich off him. Sansa would have known who he was, and the fat one too, but Arya had never taken much interest in titles and sigils. Whenever Septa Mordain had gone on about the history of this house and that house, she was inclined to drift and dream and wonder when the lesson would be done. She did remember Lord Serwyn, though. His lands had been close to Winterfell, so he and his son Clay had often visited. Yet, as fate would have it, he was the only captive who was never seen. He was abed in a tower cell, recovering from a wound. For days and days, Arya tried to work out how she might steal past the door guards to see him. If he knew her, he would be on a bound to help her. A lord would have gold for a certainty. They all did. Perhaps he would pay some of Lord Tywin's own sellswords to take her to River Run. Father always said that most sellswords would betray anyone for enough gold. Then one morning she spied 3 women in the cowled grey robes of the Silent Sisters loading a corpse into their wagon. The body was sewn into a cloak of the finest silk, decorated with a battle-axe sigil. When Arya asked who it was, one of the guards told her that Lord Serwyn had died. The words felt like a kick in her belly.
"He could never have helped you anyway," she thought, as the sisters drove the wagon through the gate. "He couldn't even help himself. You stupid mouse."
After that it was back to scrubbing and scurrying and listening at doors.
"Lord Tywin would soon march on River Run," she heard, "or he would drive south to High Garden. No one would ever expect that. No, he must defend King's Landing. Stannis was the greatest threat. He'd sent Gregor Clegane and Vargo Hoat to destroy Roose Bolton and remove the dagger from his back. He'd sent ravens to the Eyrie. He meant to wed Lady Lysa Arryn and win the Vale. He'd bought a ton of silver to forge magic swords that would slay the Stark Wargs. He was writing Lady Stark to make a peace. The Kingslayer would soon be freed."
Though ravens came and went every day, Lord Tywin himself spent most of his days behind closed doors with his war council. Arya caught glimpses of him, but always from afar. Once walking the walls in the company of 3 maesters and the fat captive with a bushy moustache. Once riding out with his lord's bannermen to visit encampments, but most often standing in an arch of the covered gallery watching men at practice in the yard below. He stood with his hands locked together on the gold pommel of his longsword. They said Lord Tywin loved gold most of all, even shit gold, she heard one squire jest. The Lannister lord was strong-looking for an old man, with stiff golden whiskers and a bald head. There was something in his face that reminded Arya of her own father, even though they looked nothing alike. "He has a lord's face, that's all," she told herself. She remembered hearing her lady mother tell father to put on his lord's face and go deal with some matter. Father had laughed at that. She could not imagine Lord Tywin ever laughing at anything. One afternoon, while she was waiting her turn to draw a pail of water from the well, she heard the hinges of the east gate groaning. A party of men rode onto the portcullis at a walk. When she espied the manticore crawling across the shield of their leader, a stab of hate shot through her. In the light of day, Sir Aimery Lorch looked less frightening than he had by torchlight, but he still had the pig's eyes, she recalled. One of the women said that his men had ridden all the way around the lake, chasing Beric Dondarrion and slaying rebels.
"We weren't rebels," Arya thought. "We were the Night's Watch. The Night's Watch takes no side."
Sir Aimery had fewer men than she remembered, though, and many wounded.
"I hope their wounds fester. I hope they all die."
Then she saw the three near the end of the column. Rorg had donned a black half-helm with a broad iron nasal that made it hard to see that he did not have a nose. Biter rode ponderously beside him, on a destrier that looked ready to collapse under his weight. Half-healed burns covered his body, making him even more hideous than before. But Jaqen H'ghar still smiled. His garb was still ragged and filthy, but he had found time to wash and brush his hair. It streamed down across his shoulders, red and white and shiny, and Arya heard the girls giggling to each other in admiration.
"I should have let the fire have them. Gentry said to. I should have listened."
If she hadn't thrown them that axe, they'd all be dead. For a moment she was afraid, but they rode past her without a flicker of interest. Only Jaqen H'ghar so much as glanced in her direction, and his eyes passed right over her.
"He does not know me," she thought. "Arya was a fierce little boy with a sword, and I'm just a grey-mouse girl with a pail."
She spent the rest of that day scrubbing steps inside the Wailing Tower. By evenfall, her hands were raw and bleeding, and her arms so sore they trembled when she lugged the pail back to the cellar. Too tired even for food, Arya begged Wheeze's pardons and crawled into a straw to sleep.
"Wheeze," she yawned. "Dunson, Chiswick, Polliver, Raff the Sweetling, Tickler, and the Hounds of Gregor, Sir Aimery, Sir Ilyn, Sir Meryn, King Joffrey, Queen Cersei."
She thought she might add three more names to her prayer, but she was too tired to decide tonight. Arya was dreaming of wolves running wild through the wood, when a strong hand clamped down over her mouth like a smooth, warm stone, solid and unyielding. She woke at once, squirming and struggling.
"A girl says nothing,"
a voice whispered close behind her ear.
"A girl keeps her lips closed. No one hears, and friends may talk in secret. Yes?"
Heart pounding, Arya managed the tiniest of nods. Jaqen H'ghar took his hand away. The cellar was black as pitch, and she could not see his face, even inches away. She could smell him, though. His skin smelled clean and soapy, and he had scented his hair.
"A boy becomes a girl," he murmured.
"I was always a girl. I didn't think you saw me."
"A man sees. A man knows."
She remembered that she hated him. "You scared me. You're one of them now. I should have let you burn. What are you doing here? Go away, or I'll yell for Wheeze."
"A man pays his debts. A man owes three."
"Three?"
"The Red God has his due, sweet girl, and only death may pay for life. This girl took three that were his. This girl must give three in their places. Speak the names, and a man will do the rest."
"He wants to help me," Arya realized with a rush of hope that made her dizzy.
Take me to River Run. It's not far. If we stole some horses, we could—"
He laid a finger on her lips.
"Three lives you shall have of me. No more, no less, three, and we are done. So, a girl must ponder." He kissed her hair softly. "But not too long."
By the time Arya lit the stub of a candle, only a faint smell remained of him, a whiff of ginger and cloves lingering in the air. The woman in the next niche rolled over on her straw and complained of the light, so Arya blew it out. When she closed her eyes, she saw faces swimming before her: Joffrey and his mother, Ilyan Payne, and Merin Trant, and Sandor Clegane. But they were in King's Landing, hundreds of miles away, and Sir Gregor had lingered only a few nights before departing again for more foraging, taking Ref and Chiswick and the Tickler with him. Sir Amory Lorch was here, though, and she hated him almost as much. Didn't she? She wasn't certain. And there was always Wheeze. She thought of him again the next morning, when lack of sleep made her yawn.
"Weasel," Wheeze purred, "next time I see that mouth droop open, I'll pull out your tongue and feed it to my bitch."
He twisted her ear between his fingers to make certain she'd heard, and told her to get back to those steps. He wanted them clean down to the third landing by nightfall. As she worked, Arya thought about the people she wanted dead. She pretended she could see their faces on the steps and scrubbed harder to wipe them away. The Starks were at war with the Lannisters, and she was a Stark, so she should kill as many Lannisters as she could. That was what you did in wars. But she didn't think she could trust Jaqen.
"I should kill them myself."
Whenever her father had condemned a man to death, he did the deed himself, with Ice, his greatsword. If you would take a man's life, you owe it to him to look him in the face and hear his last words. She'd heard him tell Rob and John once. The next day, she avoided Jake and Hagar, and the day after that. It was not hard. She was very small, and Harrenhal was very large, full of places where a mouse could hide. And then Sir Gregor returned, earlier than expected, driving a herd of goats this time in place of a herd of prisoners. She'd heard he'd lost four men in one of Lord Beric's night raids, but those Arya hated returned unscathed and took up residence on the second floor of the Wailing Tower. Wheeze saw they were well supplied with drink.
"They always have a good thirst, that nut," he grumbled. "Weasel, go up and ask if they've got any clothes that need mending. I'll have the women see to it."
Arya ran up her well-scrubbed steps. No one paid her any mind when she entered. Chiswick was seated by the fire with a horn of ale to hand, telling one of his funny stories. She dared not interrupt unless she wanted a bloody lip.
"After the Anse Tawny, it were, before the war come," Chiswick was saying, "we were on our ways back west. Seven of us with Sir Gregor. Raff was with me, and young Just Stillwood, he'd squire for Sir in the lists. Well, we come on this piss-water river, running high on account of there been rains. No way to ford, but there's an alehouse near, so there we repair. Sir rousts the brewer and tells him to keep our horns full till the waters fall. And you should see the man's pig eyes shine at the sight of silver. So he's fetching us ale, him and his daughter. And poor thin stuff it is, no more'n brown piss, which don't make me any happier, nor sir neither. And all the time this brewer's saying how glad he is to have us, custom being slow on account of them rains. The fool won't shut his yap. Not him, though sir is saying not a word, just brooding on the night of pansies and that bugger's trick he played. You can see how tight his mouth sits, so me
and the other lads, we know better than to say a squeak to him. But this brewer, he's got to talk. He even asked how my lord fared in the